Welcome to Pro-Life in 7 Minutes, the show where I spend over 20 minutes teaching you how you can persuade a pro-choice person in only 7. I'm your host, Catherine Burrow. I'm the co-founder and executive director of the Abortion Dialogue Academy, also known as ADA. Let's dive into today's episode. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. So today's episode is going to be on how to talk about abortion in the case of rape. Quick reminder before we get started, today's episode is going to be building on and talking about concepts that we covered in season one. So if you haven't listened to season one yet, I would recommend going back and listening to all that first before you dive into today's episode. To start, abortion in the case of rape is a circumstance argument. It's actually nothing new. I taught in season one all of the tools you would need in order to know how to respond to it. That being said, I still felt like it warranted its entirely own episode just to explain why most of the ways that pro-life people like to talk about this issue are very unpersuasive and I personally think counterproductive. So in this episode, I'm going to cover the 4 most common things I hear pro-life people say and why they are bad. And then at the very end, I'm going to cover what you should say instead. So to start, the first thing I hear pro-life people say is that they deny that you can get pregnant after being raped. If you remember back in 2012, during the election, there was a senator who said that if a rape was legitimate, a woman would not actually get pregnant. Her body would stop her from conceiving, so to speak. So to begin with, this is not a true statement. It's not scientifically accurate. Women can conceive a pregnancy even when the sex was not consensual. But it's additionally a very bad comment to make because it introduces this concept of legitimate versus not legitimate rape. And what you have to recognize for the pro-choice person you're talking to is that a lot of them are going to know someone who has been sexually assaulted or raped. Sexual violence is unfortunately very common. I know sometimes as pro-life advocates, we can sometimes live pretty sheltered lives and maybe don't initially realize how prevalent it is. I know that I was very sheltered in high school and it wasn't until I got to college that I realized how immensely huge the problem of sexual violence is and how many of my friends were either sexually assaulted or raped. So it's a terrifying reality. And for the pro-choice people you're talking to, it's going to be a lot of times very, very personal. And so to try to make distinctions that sometimes it's, you know, legitimate and other times it's not comes across very, very uncompassionate to the pro-choice person. So if you learn literally nothing from this episode other than this, just please just never have the words legitimate and rape next to each other in a sentence on abortion. I promise you, it does not matter what you are trying to communicate. It will never go well when you put those two words together when you're talking about this topic. Now, I personally don't think that most pro-life people are running around denying that you can get pregnant from rape. Mostly what I hear pro-life people say is kind of a variation of this. We love to talk about how very few abortions, like less than 1% of abortions, are because of rape. And I say we because I used to do this all the time before I had training, and I really hate that I did because it is very, very unpersuasive. And I'm going to explain why. If you remember from our last 2 episodes, like we do this with back alley abortions, we do this with life with a mother scenarios, we do this with abortion in the case of rape. We love to talk about how rare these things are and how they really don't happen as frequently as people make them out to be. And as I've said on those last 2 episodes, the reason this is so, so unpersuasive to say is because it sounds so unempathetic to the women who find themselves in that 1%. It just sounds like you're not taking this situation very seriously, which is obviously not true, but that's how it's going to come across. And on top of that, they're going to feel like you're dodging the question. You saying that scenario is not very common doesn't really answer, well, what should we do when that rare scenario does happen? The next thing I hear pro-life people do is what I call the happy anecdote. So sometimes this is a literal story of a woman who was raped, kept her baby, and was really happy with that decision. Other times it's kind of a more vague, well, a lot of women who are raped do keep their children and they view it as like a blessing. It kind of helps redeem that horrible experience, all of those kind of sentiments. And so the problem with anecdotes about individual people's experiences is that everybody is different. For every anecdote that a pro-life person presents of someone who was raped and loves that they kept their child, the pro-choice person can come back with an equally compelling anecdote of a woman who was raped and had an abortion, and that was the best decision and it helped her overcome her sexual assault. You want to avoid presenting happy anecdotes to the pro-choice person because those anecdotes are not the reason you're pro-life. You're pro-life because abortion kills an innocent person. So for example, you know, a woman could commit infanticide hypothetically and feel great about it, feel like that was the best decision for her. But we all recognize that regardless of how she feels on the topic, it should be illegal for her to have done that. So you want to avoid this kind of happy anecdote battle that you can get into with pro-choice people because it's not really the reason we think abortion should be legal. It's not a compelling argument, and they can very quickly just throw it back in your face with their own anecdote that says the opposite of what you just said. Another thing I hear pro-life people say about this topic is they will compare abortion to being like a second rape. Well, first of all, we're now back in people's personal experiences land. And this is all about the woman viewing the abortion procedure as a second rape. Now, if a woman who has been sexually assaulted, gotten pregnant, had an abortion, feels like that is her experience, and she feels like that's what the abortion was like, and she wants to say that, I am not going to tell her she cannot say that, obviously. I will tell her that's not going to be persuasive to the pro-choice person because, once again, her personal experience is probably not going to be other people's personal experiences, and the anecdote war you pretty much never win in. All that being said, though, if you are not someone who has personally experienced being raped, getting pregnant, having an abortion, and you in your own personal experience feeling like the rape and the abortion were the same, don't say this. And the reason you shouldn't say this is because the pro-choice person is going to be really, really offended by this analogy. I wouldn't even say that the abortion is additionally traumatic. Like, even if you put it on a lesser plane than the rape itself, I still would not make this analogy because it's just always going to come across to the pro-choice person as offensive and dismissive of sexual violence. Any pro-choice person who's had any sort of gynecology experience or can even imagine a gynecology doctor experience is going to recognize how totally different that is from rape. Now, obviously, you and I recognize that an abortion is very different than just a routine exam at the gynecologist, but it isn't in the pro-choice person's mind. In the pro-choice person's mind, they're very similar. You know, the woman is there consensually. She wants the abortion. She's told what's going to happen. And at any point, she can withdraw her consent from the procedure. And the doctors are not trying to harm her or injure her. Now, some of my listeners might disagree with the description of an abortion I just gave, but you have to keep in mind that that is the description in the pro-choice person's mind. That's how they view abortion. They view it very similarly to a gynecological exam. And that is night and day different from sexual assault, where there is someone who is trying to hurt you, that you cannot stop the situation, that you did not consent to the situation, that you did not want the situation to happen. Totally different from a doctor's appointment. So for the pro-choice person, it does not matter, even if they've had none of these experiences, they're just going to know that these two things are not analogous, and you comparing the two is just going to rub them the wrong way. I'm telling you right now, just don't do it. And additionally, it's also not the reason that you think abortion should be illegal. Like, we think abortion should be illegal because it should be illegal to kill innocent people. It should be illegal to kill the fetus, which is an innocent person, not because the abortion procedure itself is traumatic. So it's not really the reason you're pro-life to begin with, and it's very unhelpful to say in the conversation. So the last argument that I hear people say a lot is kind of this idea of, well, why is the child getting the death penalty for the crimes of the father? Sometimes pro-life people will talk about the fact that we really never punish people for the sins of their parents. So why is the baby being killed for the sins of the dad? The reason this argument just falls flat with pro-choice people is because the reason a woman wants an abortion in the case of rape has nothing to do with punishing anyone. She's not trying to punish her rapist, but because she can't, she's punishing his offspring. Like, the reason she wants an abortion in the pro-choice person's mind, and the reason why the pro-choice person thinks she should be allowed to get one, is because they don't think there's a person yet, and they recognize that an unplanned pregnancy after being traumatized would be very difficult, so they're trying to prevent that from happening. It would be like, you know, in the middle of, you know, a sexual assault, trying to like inject yourself quickly with a birth control pill so you don't conceive from it. Like, that's how like the pro-choice people are viewing abortion in the case of rape. It's not about justice and, you know, the baby getting punished for the dad's sins. It's about preventing a person from coming into existence for a woman who's really not ready to be a mother and to care for this child. So like every circumstance argument, rape is a circumstance argument. The pro-choice person is assuming the fetus is not a person. And if you want to respond to it, you have to show them that they're making that assumption and show them that the fetus is a person, which this crimes of the father argument doesn't do at all. I understand why pro-life people love this line, because it feels like it's got this like rhetorical like oomph to it, like we're punishing the wrong person. But punishment's not even in the pro-choice person's like mind. Like, this is a great example of like what I would call lost in translation. So in English, we have a lot of sayings like, it's raining cats and dogs. But if you try to translate that into like another language, like Spanish, people will look at you like you're crazy. Like, it doesn't retain its meaning in the different language. It's lost in translation, so to speak. And this happens so much with pro-choice and pro-life people. In fact, I'll probably do an entire series on just things that we say that they're just like, what? Totally lost in translation. And this is a great example where it's like the pro-choice person is like, what are you talking about? Like, this isn't about crime and punishment. Like, this is about trying to help rape victims, because in their mind, they are assuming so much that the fetus is not a person that our whole we're punishing the wrong person argument, it just doesn't land. It doesn't stick. It's not compelling. So what is compelling? How do you talk about this issue? Well, what you need to do is you need to do our circumstance response. You need to show the pro-choice person that they're assuming that the fetus is not a person, and if the fetus was a person, that their logic would no longer follow. So always, 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 when you're talking about abortion in the case of rape, take a lot of time to build common ground. A lot of pro-choice people view us as like pro-rape because we just don't take the time to stop and just say like how much we agree with pro-choice people, like how much we totally 100% agree that sexual violence is a problem, that it's prevalent, that it's horrible, that it's so tragic that a woman could be so horribly victimized and then to find herself pregnant after all of that. I'm telling you guys, like, I am pregnant right now. It is horrible. Like, I hate being pregnant, and I can't even imagine how much harder it probably is to be pregnant after a violent crime was committed against you. We need to tell pro-choice people how much we agree with them on this topic. And then after you build common ground, then you do our circumstance response. So you'll say to the pro-choice person, like, however, if there was a newborn in this situation, a newborn who was conceived and born out of rape, we would agree that it should be illegal to kill that newborn because he's a person. So do you see how at whatever point the fetus becomes a person like the newborn, abortion should be illegal, even in this really horrible, tragic situation of rape, because at that point it would be killing an innocent person. Now, one of two things is going to happen when you do this with a pro-choice person. Sometimes they actually already think the fetus is a person. They just like feel so much empathy for women. They can't really connect the logical dots. And so when you just show them this logic, it's very easy for them to be like, okay, yeah, you're right. Like, I see how rape can both be tragic and horrible, but also killing an innocent person isn't a good solution to this societal problem. The other response you're going to get is pro-choice people are going to be like, yeah, but I don't think it's a person. And see, that's what you got to talk about. You got to talk about personhood. So this leads us to the first step of the personhood section, where you ask, okay, so what do you think the fetus would need to be legally considered a person like the newborn? So even though this episode was mostly what not to say, I hope it was still helpful to you. And I just want to say, though, if any of you listening have done any of these things that I advised you not to do in this episode, please do not feel bad about it. I'm telling you right now, I have been there, done that, got the t-shirt. I have said all of the unpersuasive, uncompelling things myself. The way you have to look at it is like, look, it's really easy to sit on the sidelines and not say anything with the abortion debate. And it takes a lot of bravery to speak up. And if you've never received any training, of course, you're going to probably say things that maybe don't land or don't hit the mark. Like, why wouldn't you? But you should be proud that you at least made an effort to try and defend the unborn, even if, you know, your first attempt was not the best. And so I just want you to take heart that, like, hey, you tried, be proud of that effort. But then moving forward, do something else that you know now is better and more compelling. And I'm telling you, like, statistically, it is very compelling and very persuasive. If we meet someone who only thinks abortion should be legal in the case of rape, our volunteers on average are persuading like 55% of them that abortion should be illegal in all cases. This circumstance stuff really does work. Okay, so next week, we're going to talk about how to respond to the idea that men can't have an opinion on abortion. So maybe you're talking to a pro-choice man who's being like, well, I just am pro-choice because I don't really think I should have a say in this issue. Or you are a pro-life man yourself and you have pro-choice people telling you that you're not allowed to have an opinion on this issue. So we're going to talk about how to respond to that in next week's episode. If you liked today's episode, you can help support the channel by leaving us a 5-star review. Make sure you hit that follow button so you never miss an episode. And if you haven't yet, sign up for our podcast email list on our website. That's www.abortiondialogueacademy.org/podcast. That way you get all the training exercises from the show delivered right to your inbox. Now I will see all of you next Saturday as I continue to teach you how you can persuade someone to be pro-life in 7 minutes. Until next week, God bless.